My name is Rich Webb. I was born in 1958, which makes me born during the Eisenhower administration. And I've been asked to talk about the Vietnam War and my experiences with it. And really, I don't have any. I'm a little bit too young to have actually served in Vietnam, but I did serve in the Army not too long after the Vietnam War had ended, so I have a little bit of perspective that I can talk about. The roots of the Vietnam War go way back. If you want to blame somebody, I always blame Franklin Roosevelt. Towards the end of the Second World War, he and the other powers drew up maps on how to line up different countries and split them in half. You can be this and we can be that. It's not just Vietnam. Korea is still a problem. North and South Korea. So when I think about the causes and the roots of the Vietnam War, it became the Western powers just delineating, you're going to be this and the other half is going to be that and never the twain shall meet. The French had their influence because they owned Indochina as a colonizing power before World War II. When the Japanese came through and kicked the French out, and then the Allies came in and kicked the Japanese out, when the Americans took over, they realized that there was no infrastructure to maintain the civilian government, so they actually brought the Japanese back in to sort of be in charge of the administration. This, of course, pissed off the Vietnamese people who had been spending the last several years trying to kick the Japanese out and dealing with the atrocities the Japanese had left on them. We were unpopular from the beginning. When the French were defeated at Dien Bien Phu, the United States was asked to intervene militarily. I don't think they did. They certainly helped, but they did not actively send troops or drop bombs or whatever. But it was thought that if South Vietnam were to fall to the communists, Cambodia and Thailand and Burma and India and the domino theory, all these countries would go communist, and this was a big, big deal. The Red Scare of the 50s still lingered in the thoughts of the American political system. To be declared or accused of being a communist was about the worst thing that could happen. You had to take loyalty oaths to be in the government, to be a teacher, really to work anywhere. If you were suspected of being a communist, your life was over. There was nothing left for you. So when China fell to the communists in 1949 and 1950, there was a movement by the Republican Party to blame the fall to the communists of China on the Democrats. And because it became a political football, it became highly emotionally and governmentally charged. So the fall of a country to communism would fall on your political party and you would suffer the consequences. These were still active issues in the day. Of course, I was born in 1958. This all happened before my time. As the government in South Vietnam seemed more precarious, President Kennedy decided to send troops in to stabilize the situation. And I say it with that kind of voice because it didn't. There was a coup engineered by the South Vietnamese generals, aided and abetted by the CIA, and more or less agreed to by the American government at the highest levels. And the president of South Vietnam was assassinated not too long before Kennedy himself was killed. Johnson couldn't let another country fall to communism, especially since we were already invested, and so began the ramp up. Thousands and thousands of people were sent to Vietnam. Tens of thousands of people were inducted into the army against their will. There was no option. You were drafted. There just happened to be a war now, and lots of people got drafted and sent to war. This became a very unpopular thing. I do remember the college campuses erupting in protest. There was a lot of protest, not the least of which was Vietnam. It was a very dynamic time to be alive. I was only 10 years old in 1968, probably the height of the Vietnam War. But I knew it existed. It was on the news every night. Weekly body counts, film footage of the Tet Offensive, people dying, people being shot, and the protests. People in the streets saying they didn't want to be drafted. They didn't want to go die in some foreign land. They certainly didn't want to die for no real known reason. It wasn't that Vietnam had a clear goal, that it was known why we were fighting, because really, what is it then other to prop up the government you've always propped up? That was the only reason to be there. So there was mass protests against the draft, against the war, against the Johnson administration. Vietnam came to be seen as a Democrats' war, even though a lot of presidents, a lot of administrations had contributed to it. So the Democratic Convention in Chicago in 1968 was protested by people who were against the war. And Richard Daley and his thugs put that protest down pretty handily. Eventually the draft sort of went away and became a lottery system based upon when you were born. So I imagine that in basic training, you'd find a large number of people all born on the same day. I don't remember quite how high the draft went. 365 days of the year, 200 of those days, all the men born on those days were sent into the army. All the rest of them were deferred for a year until the next draft. But then it became draft deferment, go to college, get out of the war, be the only surviving son, get out of the war, became to be seen as an unfair system. It was unfair to begin with, being drafted, joined the army, sent to some foreign land. It was said that the Vietnam War was the black man being sent to kill the yellow man on behalf of the white man who had taken their country from the red man. I remember that phrase. So the Vietnam War, American people had just tired of it, and Nixon was elected in part because he promised to end the war. What wasn't known at the time is that he had secretly negotiated with the North Vietnamese to scuttle the Paris peace talks in preparation for him being elected, nominated and elected. So because the war dragged on, it was politically inopportune for it to end before the election. So he sent his representatives to negotiate with the North Vietnamese to scuttle the peace talks. So if the war would drag on into the election, became an elective issue, and he was elected in a landslide. Nixon was a very unpopular president. I hated him for a long time, but he did end the war. He did bring the troops home. The downside of that was, without the United States there to prop up the corrupt government of South Vietnam, without the United States firepower to back up the South Vietnamese army, that army collapsed in 1975. Very famous photos of the evacuation from the embassies and the helicopters from the rooftops, of the helicopters being pushed off the aircraft carriers because there wasn't room to store them, of the refugees from America and the American allies on those ships being brought back home ingloriously. And that was in 1975. About that time, I was between my junior and senior years in high school and wondering what I was going to do with the rest of my life. That summer, I had investigated most of the major armed forces to see what they offered me. I checked out the Army and the Navy and the Air Force. I guess I didn't check out the Coast Guard or the Marines. That seemed like something I didn't want to do. In January of 1976, I signed up for the Army, going active about a month after I graduated from high school in the bicentennial year of 1976. I spent 2 months in basic training in Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri. I spent 2 more months in advanced training and infantry training in Fort Benning, Georgia. My first posting was in Fort Lewis, Washington. That was part of my contract when I signed up with the Army, was that I got to choose where I would serve, at least for my initial term, and I wanted to return to Washington where I'd lived before. The first year I was there, I remember being on, it was a guard duty, but essentially you were hanging out as a junior enlisted man with a medium rank sergeant overnight, make sure the buildings didn't catch on fire, and chatting with him about his experiences in Vietnam, because the war wasn't that long ago ended. And a lot of the people, at least in the middle and upper rank, had served in Vietnam and had memories of being in Vietnam. And I remember 2 stories that he told me. One was that when they would go out on patrol, they'd take a 6-pack of beer. I don't know if the alcohol helped, but certainly they were trying to fight the effects of dehydration, and so they'd drink beer on their missions. The other story he told me was that, well, he was a Hawaiian guy and therefore looked Asiatic, and they would have him wear what they called the black pajamas, essentially the more or less unofficial uniform of the North Vietnamese Army, black fatigues. And they would have this Hawaiian soldier dress up in the black fatigues and lead the patrol wherever they were going. And that way, if they were seen, the first thing the North Vietnamese would see was an Asian-looking guy in the black fatigues, and they wouldn't immediately assume it was a patrol of Americans coming down on top of them. I spent 4 years in the U.S. Army from 1976 to 1980, essentially the Carter administration. And as I look back on it years later, I recognize that it was one of the more peaceful times in American history. There was certainly an incident early in that time where a patrol of South Koreans had gone to the demilitarized zone. It was soldiers and workers, and they were tasked with cutting down a tree which had grown and had blocked the view of a North Korean observation post. A force of North Koreans came into the demilitarized zone, not only stopped the effort to cut down the tree, but using axes and shovels and whatever else they could take from the workers, they killed one or more of those workers sent out to cut down that tree. I remember a guy, I was in basic training at the time, a guy came up to me and said that, "You seem pretty smart. Do you think we're going to go to war in South Korea?" Well, I recognized that there were a lot of other people in the Army at the time that were already in place, advanced, with equipment, training already taken care of. I told this other guy that it was much more likely that they would be sent into the conflict first if there were such a thing. We were in basic training. We weren't going to be dropped there immediately. So at least we had a little while to work into it. As it turns out, that did not become an international incident worthy of going to war for. And the Carter administration wound up being a very peaceful time in history. Well, Jimmy Carter lost the election in 1980. and warmonger Ronald Reagan came into office. Within a few years, he decided to invade a small island country in the Caribbean called Grenada. It wasn't really much of a contest. The world's largest imperial superpower and most expansive military beating up on a little island nation. Yeah, they had Cuban and Russian advisors working on the airport, working on the infrastructure, working with the government. It wasn't a significant battle. And when that incident was over, Ronald Reagan was cheered as a hero. He had ended what had been known as the Vietnam Syndrome, a syndrome under which the United States was seen as somehow weak, was somehow seen as ineffective, seen as impotent. Now Ronald Reagan could fly the flag over the White House as a victorious war president. How times changed.